It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the bad to good, to live in harmony. It starts with you and me. Have to teach the children about living with each other, 'cause the future will soon be in their hands. Watching us close, they follow our steps. If we do right, I'm sure they'll understand.
Hello and welcome to Spingola and Friends. It is Wednesday, December 10th, 2014. This is Deanna Spingola. This radio program does not have any corporate sponsors. Therefore, we are free to discuss controversial topics that are not politically correct and those you might not hear on other programs. My website is spingola.com, where you will find information about my three books, the Ruling Elite series, as well as a timeline of book 2 and 3. My new book will be coming out soon. It is entitled Screening Sandy Hook, Causes and Consequences. Please also visit the website of a dear friend and listener who has created and maintains spingolaspeaks.wordpress.com. All the more recent audio files of my programs are at this site, including the RBN audio files, the American Free Press files, and of course the files of this program. My Twitter account is twitter.com/Deanna Spingola. If you have questions during the program, we invite you to call in at 646-787-1915. And our guest today, and also please send your questions to comment@spingola.com or ask them in the chat room at spingola.chatango.com. Please remember that I do not access my regular email during the program. Our guest today is Eric Hunt. His website is gaschamberhoax.com. He is the creator of The Last Days of the Big Lie, which he produced, came out in 2011, on May 23rd, 2011. He also produced the Jewish Gas Chamber Hoax, which was published on March 5th, 2014, and also the Treblinka Archaeology Hoax, which also came out this year, and just recently, the Majdanek Gas Chamber Myth, which is absolutely superlative, absolutely beyond, he's just gone beyond anything that he's done before. It is fabulous, wonderful, and I invite you to please, please, please watch this video. It is terrific, absolutely wonderful. Eric, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me on, and thanks for all the help you've given me to help complete some of these recent films.
Well, it's just terrific that you're able to do this, that you have the education, the courage, well, particularly the courage and the background to be able to do this. And, of course, also the other website that we want to mention is the HolocaustHoaxMuseum.com, HolocaustHoaxMuseum.com. So please, please, please visit that website. Also, it is absolutely a terrific website and innovative, just so innovative. And if you can contribute any skills, any money, anything that Eric could use, feel free to offer your talent, and he would be most happy to have your talent. Correct?
Yeah, I mean, I've had to shoot the last two documentaries on a smartphone. I would really appreciate if you enjoyed the the videos. I really could use some help with funding to afford a proper camera. I'd like to do some more work next year and possibly even reshoot some of the old footage. And I could really only do that with some of the help of the people who enjoy the videos. So
okay.
I really appreciate that.
All righty. And you do accept donations at your website, and that's HolocaustHoaxMuseum.com. And that is where you can also see the films and make a donation via PayPal at that website. All righty, this film, as I said, it is just absolutely amazing. You cover so many things. There is no one who can watch this film without rethinking what they previously thought about the Holocaust. And of course, we've all grown up thinking that the Holocaust was an event, something that really did happen. We've all been indoctrinated by the films that we've seen out of Hollywood, by even at school. Even at school, we get indoctrinated. So, somebody said in the chat room says that you sound muffled. You don't sound muffled to me, but Eric's internet went down, so he's in a public facility. So if there's some background noise, just live with it.
Sorry about that, guys. But yeah, it's true what you said, and in fact, we're already seeing some capitulation on the part of the true believers, you could say, on some message boards that debate this controversy. There's actually one individual who's actually hurled a lot of abuse towards me in the past that has been forced to admit that what I say in this video is true, and that the propaganda surrounding this camp should stop immediately.
Right.
And this is pretty rare, so it really is making people re-examine their delusions, you could say.
Exactly. I mean, you talk about the disease. You even mentioned Andersonville, which was one of the prison camps, the southern prison camps, the Confederate prison camps, during the Civil War. And, in fact, I've got Civil War books that actually show images of the camp. And, of course, we don't hear too much about the Union camps, but we sure as heck did hear a lot about Andersonville. And every war, it doesn't matter what war you're talking about, there is going to be typhus, there's going to be lice, there's going to be all kinds of diseases. In fact, more people died during the Civil War from disease than from anything else because of the environment, the way that people live, the close quarters, the lack of facilities, the lack of showers, the lack of proper food, and just basic hygiene. And so anyway, I don't know where you want to start. It's just you talk about the crematoria. And of course, Majdanek was one of the first prison camps that was so-called liberated, and the Soviets liberated it. So why don't you tell us about the Soviet liberation and the changes and some of the things that they made? Go ahead.
Yeah. So Majdanek was the first major concentration camp liberated by the victorious Allies, and when the Soviets captured the camp, they put together a commission of Poles and Soviets. The commission was called the Polish-Soviet Commission. It was made up of so-called doctors and scientists, the best and brightest minds that these truth tellers could come up with. And they originally claimed that 2 million were murdered in this so-called factory of death, which had gas chambers and these crematories. originally they claimed there were 7 gas chambers at this camp. However, due to the great work of revisionists throughout the years, the death toll at this camp has precipitously dropped. Now the official death toll is down from 2 million down to 78,000. This is still an exaggeration. Revisionist Carlo Mattonio and Jürgen Graf.
Are you there? Whoops, did we lose him? Let's see, did we lose Eric? He's still showing us on. I'm not sure. Let me just see if he's messaged something. Let me just, are you there? Like I say, there have been some internet instabilities. So I just texted him to see if he's there. And he's not texting me back. So we may have lost him, which if that is the case, we will proceed until he comes back. Alrighty. Anyway, if you have an opportunity to see this very, 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 very wonderful film, I hope that you will do that. We were talking about the impressions that people get and about the education that we have all received. I think he's off. It shows just... I'm going to try and add him again. Are you there, Eric?
Hi.
Okay, yeah. I don't know what happened.
I don't know where I was cut off, but so originally when the Soviets captured the camp, they claimed 2 million were murdered there. And now the Majdanek Museum claims 78,000 were murdered there. However, revisionists dispute this. Carlo Mattonio and Jürgen Graf, who put out a great book on Majdanek, claim that 42,000 is the is the real death toll of the camp. Mostly due to catastrophically poor hygiene conditions in the early days of the camp. In addition, originally 7 gas chambers were alleged to have been operating homicidal gas chambers at Majdanek. However, that also has been revised throughout the years, and now currently there are only 2 alleged homicidal gas chambers at Majdanek.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, the thing, you know, I've noticed that with any kind of a situation, that the people who get the first messages out will have the most credibility, even if the message is totally fabricated, if it's all just a bunch of lies. It is the people that have the platform, and the people that had the platform with the Holocaust, of course, was a certain group, a certain ethnic group. And so they have a benefit there.
Yeah, well, originally a lot of news agencies didn't believe the reports coming out of the camp, and actually the BBC refused to air a report. And this was the correct decision. They brought Western journalists here, I believe, weeks after the camp was captured. The Soviets basically brought Western journalists around the camp on a guided propaganda tour. And, you know, they would stack human skulls and bones in, like, a pyramid structure to, like, really get these...
Whoops, where'd we go here? Are you there? I'm still showing you as there. Whoops. What happened? Oh, dear. Oops. I don't know what happened here again. Let's just see if we can get this, get Eric back. Are you there? Eric, are you there? Okay, I am calling Eric back.
Hi, hello.
Hi, okay, we lost you again. Okay, you were talking about the Western journalist and that they were there for propaganda, and of course that's what they did at the other camps too, is that they brought the Western journalist over, they brought Hollywood directors over, and that's what happened.
Yeah, so at Majdanek, the most important building at the camp is called Bath and Disinfection 1. Now, what this is exactly what it says it is. It's just a disinfestation building, a delousing station located at the very entrance of the camp. And it's just a normal delousing station. What happened was people would remove their clothes. These clothes were put in a fumigation chamber. They would get their hair cut to remove any places where deadly typhus-carrying lice could thrive. They would, of course, they'd be in an undressing room, take off their clothing. They'd go into showers. They would take hot showers. The hot showers were necessary to kill lice, bacteria, any bed bugs that could be on them. Then, as you see in the video, they would dunk in these disinfestation tubs that were filled with special chemicals.
Wow.
And then they would enter the dressing room. They'd put on lice-free clothing. Then they'd enter the camp. That's all the structure is. And this is the last place in the camp that they claim there are two homicidal gas chambers today. However, when you really examine this structure, which really is a life-saving facility and was a life-saving facility, their entire life falls apart.
Indeed.
So,
we do have a caller. So
great.
Let's go ahead and take a call from the 661 area. Caller, 661? Did you have a question? 661, are you just listening, or did you actually have a question? Oh, apparently maybe this person just has a question. Just
right.
Listening. Okay, so we'll mute 661. You had your opportunity to speak to Eric. Okay. All righty, go ahead.
So the biggest problem with this facility is we're taught at Majdanek, and this has become the official narrative, that Jews were gassed in gas chambers disguised as shower rooms. However, at Majdanek, there's a real shower room. It's connected to a boiler room. No one even disputes that it's not a real shower room. And the actual fumigation chambers are separate. They're 25 to 30 feet away and totally different structure. Originally, it wasn't even connected to this other building. However, you know, at the other camps, we're told that the actual gas chambers were designed to look like showers with fake shower heads and all of this. However, when we go to Majdanek, they're completely separate. We're told that at Majdanek, the purpose was to trick the prisoners into taking showers first before going into the gas chambers. Originally, we were told it was to open their pores so that the gas would work faster.
Isn't that ridiculous? In the movie, in the video, you indicate exactly why they were taking showers, of course, and made a comparison that they did the same thing at Ellis Island. They do the same thing at prisons here in this country, where you get new clothes, you go through, you take shower, you get, they go through the same process. It is a fact that they do this to keep the disease down, and that's what they did.
Yeah, this is common at several camps. This was even common when the British occupied Palestine. They still have facilities there, you can see, that involve the showers and fumigation chambers for the clothing. Of course, this talk about showering before getting gassed is totally absurd. In fact, there are several modifications to this building that tell a very different story. So, in 1946, 2 years after the actual, quote, liberation of the camp, museum authorities actually connected these clothing fumigation chambers with this barracks that has the showers and the undressing rooms and things in it. They connected all of these structures to make gullible, stupid tourists believe that prisoners walked into this building and took their clothes off and took a shower and then walked into gas chambers. However, originally these were two separate structures. They were completely separated. You'd have to walk outside of one of them to walk into the so-called gas chambers, which were, one of them was actually just a clothing fumigation room. Also, the biggest lie of the Majdanek Museum and the actual industry as a whole is that prisoners actually walked through this facility the opposite way that they heard these idiotic tourists through today. And they walked through this facility. The original entrance is actually covered up by this connecting structure I mentioned. So no prisoners ever walked through the way the Majdanek Museum herds tourists through today. They actually walked the opposite way, away from the gas chambers. And it's funny because one of the rooms they have in there, they stack Zyklon B canisters in. It looks really scary and frightening for these gullible tourists. But when you actually look at the plans for the bath and disinfection too, which is a nearly identical delousing station right next to this bath and disinfection one, well, it shows that this room with these canisters in it was actually a hair cutting room. And the original plan still exists for a similar facility. And they prove basically that the exact opposite of everything the Majdanek Museum claims. They label their rooms incorrectly. They label the undressing room the dressing room. They label the dressing room the undressing room. And, of course, that room with the Zyklon, they claim that was for clothing storage. But what is funniest of all is probably that what was actually the undressing room, which today they're calling the dressing room, for over 60 years they were claiming this was a so-called experimental gas chamber where Zyklon was dropped through holes in the ceiling on unsuspecting prisoners. Of course, this is a room with a very visible, easily breakable window, easily breakable wooden doors, and the Majdanek Museum has forced to backtrack on that claim that they had for 60 years, that this was an experimental room used for murdering.
Right, and you show the hole in the ceiling, and obviously, as you indicate, it was probably made very crudely because it was cement, and
I'm sorry to interrupt, but
go ahead.
The holes in that specific room were actually made by a Polish civilian construction firm. The invoices still exist, and these were ventilation holes. This room had to serve as a makeshift fumigation room. That's why there's the blue staining on the walls of that particular room.
Okay.
However, you're talking about the other holes and some of the other rooms. Two of the three rooms you mentioned that have these crudely formed holes are no longer alleged to have been used to murder anyone. And only one of them is today.
One of the things that you talk about in the film, and something that I always wondered as a kid, were the handprints in the cement, the scratch marks. And when I read about that, I thought, that doesn't seem like that could possibly be, that people would be able to scratch cement, because, well, that just is impossible. But as a kid, I thought, well, I don't know, maybe they were that desperate. But no, you cannot scratch cement. I'm sorry, it just can't be done. And yet, that's what the propagandist said, was that the victims were scratching and that there were handprints, and people believe it.
Yeah, well, not only people, but very influential people. And in the movie, you see Glenn Beck going to a tour one of the camps, and he's of course gets very emotional when he sees these claw marks, like in the walls.
I mean, how could he possibly fall for that?
Well,
of course, he's a Zionist, but maybe that's
there's a few explanations.
That's undoubtedly the most major explanation.
Yeah, but I was excited to show. There's a video we were able to purchase of this is pretty. It's not very well known in the revisionist community, but there's something tied into this claiming about marks in the walls of the gas chambers. Americans, when they liberated Paris, they came across a quote Gestapo torture chamber, and they made a propaganda film, and they show this wall that has actual, it looks like a concrete wall that people just made like hundreds of handprints in wet concrete. You've seen this in the film, I guess.
Yes.
They told us that these were marks made by dying victims of Germans. It's just completely absurd. If you look at that video, you can't really take these slightly more subtle scratches at these other locations any more seriously.
Exactly. Now, you indicate too in the movie, and there were 5 new crematoria created. Because it takes 1 hour to burn one body, and so they initially had fewer crematoria. Then they had 5 ovens. In fact, they had so many bodies stacking up that because of the typhus, that they did have this makeshift morgue behind the bathhouse. And then they created more crematoria. In order to take care of all of these typhus-ridden bodies. And even then, with the added facilities, they could only take care of 100 per day maximum.
Yeah, I mean, that's being a little generous, too. I mean, originally at Majdanek, they only had 2 oil-fueled ovens. And, of course, oil was a precious resource for Germany fighting
sure.
the war. These ovens weren't enough to really get rid of the people who were dying of disease. And of course, 2 ovens, and you're claiming this was a death camp and extermination camp. Ellis Island had probably 2 ovens. We know Ellis Island had crematory ovens. They are refusing. No images have been allowed to leak of these actual ovens. So, you're claiming this is at this camp had the same amount of ovens as Ellis Island, yet this camp was supposedly used to murder 2 million people.
Right, and Ellis Island, of course, is a transitory kind of a situation. People don't really stay there unless they're sick and under unless they are being quarantined or something like that.
But
go ahead.
They added more ovens as the camp became more crowded, overcrowded really, and the typhus epidemics took a heavy toll on both prisoners and even guards. So they added this new crematorium with 5 ovens. I'm generously saying it took an hour to burn a body.
I think it takes more. I think it I think it does. Yeah, I think you're being very generous with your figure there.
And we know the bones would still be left over, and they would have to be either grinded up or disposed of some other way. And, of course, you know, there's processing times. Anyway, if you have 5 ovens, and we'll say it took 1 hour for each oven, even if they were running 24 hours a day, maybe they could cremate 100 prisoners a day.
Right.
When you add in the amount that were dying of disease, they couldn't have been gassing people on top of this. It was just not possible to dispose of the bodies. This is the bottleneck of the alleged extermination program, is the rather small amount of ovens.
Right. You know what really grossed me out in the movie?
No.
Was when you showed that one little boy who was getting his hair cut and all of the lice, and you made the distinction between body lice and hair lice. I could not believe all of the lice that were on this comb. And, I mean, his hair was very, very thick. It was just, I don't know how he lived without scratching his head till it was bloody. He had so many, it was gross. It was absolutely gross.
Yeah, I saw some video about a severe case of head lice infestation. And I guess this must be in some third world country or something. But, they take a video and they run their hair through the child's hair, and just hundreds of these squirming head lice come out. And did you scratch your head during the video? Did you scratch
pretty
your
much,
hair?
Pretty much. But yeah. I think it was very, very, very impactful that you did this, because people will remember what it would be like, what could occur if the Germans did not institute some sort of hygienic program, because that was very, well, it was very impactful. I will never forget that scene, ever.
Great.
And you also talked about all the shoes. And, I mean, people really grew up thinking that all of those shoes were taken because they took all the shoes so they could murder all these Jews, and they cut all their hair off to use for industrial purposes. And people actually believe this stuff.
Yeah, well, some people never grow up. You say that. So people see these. So there are tens of thousands of shoes at Majdanek, and originally, you know, this was claimed to have been the shoes of murdered victims. You know, this is when the original death toll was 2 million, of course. However, if you look at Majdanek, right across from where these shoes are stored, there is a shoemaker's workshop. So what happened is shoes from around the camp system and basically German occupation zones were brought to Majdanek for repair and redistribution to help aid the war effort. Some boots and shoes were sent to soldiers on the Eastern Front. Some of those shoes were used to further their war economy. This doesn't prove that the former owners of...
Whoops, I think we lost him again. Hang on, we will get him back. No, he's still there. Eric, are you still there? I'm showing you still there. Hang on. We'll get him back. We're getting him back. Okay, are you there? Okay, we're ringing him now. Oh, bless his heart. This must be terrible. Okay, I am ringing him back. Hopefully, okay, he's not picking up. And I assume that people are still hearing me. Would somebody in the chat room indicate that I'm still on? Okay, we're still trying to get him. Can you still hear me, Ed? Okay, so I'm still on. And I can see his phone ringing. But let's see. Let's see. Eric, are you there? Okay, we'll just keep trying here. This is
Hi.
Hi, okay. I keep losing you. I don't know why.
It might be like this for the next hour or so. I apologize to the listeners.
We just are so indebted to you for being with us today that we'll just tolerate this. And we're talking about the shoes and how they had a workshop where they repaired the shoes. And some people in the camp actually were breaking in shoes for German soldiers. And so they, you know, they had something to do. And there was a shoe repair shop. People didn't go there to get gas. They went there and they had things to do.
Well, yeah, and not only that, but we know that there were several. Of course, they were put to labor, but some people didn't have to work. We know that children were sent to Majdanek, and we know that they weren't gassed. We look at the living barracks today, and we can see basically bunk cribs that were used for children and infants. They're very small, no adult can possibly fit in them. And we have photographs and other evidence that of children that came through these camps and survived, and they went through these bath and disinfection buildings, and they were, of course, not murdered, but they were fed, clothed, kept alive. And some prisoners were, of course, there was a hospital. There were hospitals at Majdanek. Of course, you know, it wasn't a great place to be, wonderful place. It was World War II. People were dying everywhere.
Sure.
But there were hospitals at Majdanek, and people were given typhus vaccines when they could get the proper supplies. And of course, the prisoners were of low priority compared to the actual war going on. Majdanek wasn't to exterminate people. It was a concentration and labor camp.
Sure. And when the film opens, one of the first people that you have is the, I call her the lady with the eyebrows. I've noticed.
Helen Schwartz.
In a couple of your films, the eyebrows, these people paint them on. They're just awful. But anyway.
She looks like a clown. Yeah.
She does. And she's talking about, well, that they were told not to eat, because if you eat something, it will be harder for that, you know, they won't be able to kill you. And so.
Well, what she says is don't eat, because it's harder to die when they give you the gas.
Oh, okay. Okay. So anyway, I could not understand her thinking. But what she said was that they went into the showers, and she said, and water came out. And I'm
instead of the gas.
Yes, and she's still alive, obviously.
Yeah, she said water came out instead of the gas by some miracle. It was a miracle, you know?
Yes, it's if it was happenstance, just this one time. Gas didn't come out, but water.
They turned the wrong valve.
That was amazing. One of the things that you mentioned in the film, too, when you were showing these students, I think there were some from Kansas City, you were showing these students, and I felt so sorry for these students. And they do this every year. They take all of these students from the United States. They take them over, and they take them through Poland, and they take them to Auschwitz, and they take them to Majdanek and some of these other camps, and they feed them full of all this indoctrination and these brainwashing. And these kids are so vulnerable and gullible that they believe what they are saying. And then afterwards, after they brainwash them, mm-hmm. They take them to Israel and show them a fabulous, wonderful time. And then you say, the Holocaust brings the Jews together to hate the Europeans. And I thought, wow, no truer words were said. How very profound that, and of course this is what gives the Jews commonality. The Holocaust brings them commonality against the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this is called the March of the Living. They get young people from all around the world, young Jews. They bring them to these sites in Poland. They listen to fairy tales. Often an actual rabbi is the one leading these groups.
Right.
And they just hear absolute nonsense about what happened at all of these places. And for some reason, they like to wear the Israeli flag, like it's like a cape, like they're some sort of superhero or something. They like to walk around and it literally brings them together. They hug each other and over these non-existent gassings and things like this.
And we've had people say that. Jewish people have said that if it were not for the Holocaust, they would not have this commonality. Now, remember that if you have questions and would like to call into the program, you can do that at 646-787-1915. Have we lost Eric again? Call dropped. Okay, let's get him back. Okay, we're calling him again.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. I was just giving the phone number in case people do have questions. And, of course, people can also visit the chat room, spingola.chatango.com, or you can email me at comment@spingola.com to ask questions. Or feel free, like I said, to call in with your questions or comments to 646-787-1915. These kids are so gullible, and not only kids, but I remember back in 1999, I went to Jerusalem, and I went to Israel, the Israeli state, and took a tour, and visited the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem, and it was very dark, kind of like a sanctuary of death. And they wanted to keep it very dark and very somber and very, chamber-like. And they had the Cyclone B canister. And one of the things that they do not have is they don't have any guides. The only interaction that you have with anybody there is if you want to press a button, and then a recorded voice tells you what you're looking at, so that nobody could really ask any questions. But at Majdanek and some of the other camps, they actually do have guides who take you through and show you or tell you what they want you to believe about what you're seeing.
I didn't have a guide, but I was actually trying to avoid some of these tour groups. In fact, that's sort of, I'm pretty happy I was able to do this, because this is how I actually entered this bath and disinfection one facility the opposite way the normal tourists go through. And as I was going through the opposite way, it seemed actually not like I was going through it backwards. It actually seemed much more appropriate, and I was able to verify my suspicions through Carlo Matonio, who has the original plans still for the parallel facility. So, yeah, I avoided these tour groups to go the opposite way through this facility, and I'm really thankful for that. A lot of these tour guides, I think they really actually know what's up. I heard them talking to the tour groups about the modified structure that wasn't actually there until after the war. And, hey, they make a good living feeding this lie, continuing this lie.
That is amazing that they would even admit that structure was not the same as it was during the war and that something was added, which, of course, would make me ask, if I were part of a tour group, well, what was added and why did they add it?
Yeah, I mean, they don't really like to answer any of these questions. Anyone is free to contact Tomas Kranz, who's the research director of the
Whoops. Okay, I think we lost him again. Okay. Eric, are you there? No? Yes? See if we can get him back. He's not showing that he... Okay, add to group call. He went offline. Okay. Okay, we're trying. We are calling him again. Okay, are you there? You there?
Yes, yes.
Oh, good, good. I'm beginning to you know, those background noises is wonderful because then I can tell when you're there or not. Because when I don't hear those, I think, uh-oh, we've lost him again. And you were actually offline momentarily because your green light went off. Well, so
hopefully maybe some callers can call in and help us out.
Yes, please do. Okay. Call in with your questions at 646-787-1915. And let me check and see if we have any email. I'll check for new email. And there's a lot of books, too, that people can get in addition to watching your films. Everybody should watch your film. And I think that's one of the beauties of your films, is that they can be an introduction to anyone's research into the Holocaust. Because you can get someone to watch a film where you may not be able to get someone to read a book. So I think that is, anybody's got time to watch an hour and a half film, 2 hour film. And the things that you bring up in the film are so profound and so poignant. Pointed. I mean, they're just absolutely, you make a statement and you think, well, yeah, how did these people do that? And how could they have burnt 2,000 corpses a day? And how could they do this or that? And so it does get people interested in other research. Tell us a little bit about the person that you said was kind of a critic of yours. And now all of a sudden they've kind of changed their views.
It's just one of these posters on these message forums. You know, he's heaped a lot of scorn my way in the past. I give him credit for coming to being intellectually honest and watching my video and coming to agree with me that... there were no homicidal gas chambers at this camp, and the propaganda that continues to this day should be stopped. Of course, this individual is holding on to the claims about other camps, but it's very rare for anyone that we debate with to actually come over to the other side. However, I think this video in particular, the point about the fact that prisoners actually went the opposite way through the bath and disinfection one complex, they're not going to be able to run away from this. They're not going to be able to lie about this anymore. There are multiple sources confirming this truth. And we might see this might be the beginning of the end, as this is examined more.
Exactly. Well, they've had to change their figure at Auschwitz a few times. I mean, first they said it was 4 million, and I think now it's down to 1.5 million. But when you actually look at the Red Cross records and some of the other records, even the New York Times in 1993, I believe it was, said, well, yeah, there were really only 73,000 that died there, and only 38,000 of them were Jews. So if people really begin to question, and it used to be that people thought, oh, yeah, all of the camps were extermination camps. And now they're saying, well, okay, so maybe this camp wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of the other side has actually backed away from this claim regarding Majdanek. They're in a really tough position because they're still claiming about these gas chambers. However, the death toll is quite low at this point compared to where it was. And of course, there's so many flaws with the story at this particular camp because it was captured intact, and there's a large amount of documentary evidence to help us out.
Right. The other thing too, of course, is the numbers. Well, they like to play the numbers game, and there were more Jews after the war than there were before, whereas most other ethnic groups there were less, quite a few less. Because the war, I believe, killed 50 million people, and they're the only ethnic group that actually grew during the war.
I'm not sure about that, but what goes along with that, is something I mentioned in the video. We saw in this propaganda video that they made, March of the Living, when they went to this camp, they actually used a photograph of firebombed German civilians.
Oh, yes, yes. Was that unbelievable?
Yeah, they used a photograph of firebombed German civilians in Dresden, and they claim that these were victims of their alleged genocide. So what does that tell you?
Yes, that they had to bring bodies, German bodies, and they filmed them and said these were dead Jews. Unbelievable. Yeah.
So there's a, makes you really wonder, you know, it's funny because if you actually brought that up to these people, would they actually show sympathy for those dead people? And no, we're told that they had it coming, right?
Yes, yes. And then, of course, they turn around and look what they're doing to the Palestinians now. The Holocaust brings the Jews together with this commonality, this group victimhood, and then they turn around and slaughter the Palestinians.
Well, yeah, I point that out briefly. They actually bring them the Israeli military in uniform to the camps, you know, they're brainwashed.
Sure. I wonder if Fritz is listening to the program. I think it'd be fun if he called in. He's always a great addition.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but I'd love if any callers could call in.
Yeah, I'm just I'm amazed that we're not having any callers.
If they've seen past videos of mine, they want to talk about.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. Now, the first video that you did, as I mentioned, came out in 2011, and it was the last days of the big lie, and this was concerning, of course, the film producer, and he got an Emmy Award. Was it an Emmy?
Some sort Oscar.
Of, Oscar, okay. I don't keep up with what awards are getting out in Hollywood. I don't watch those things. I mean, it's just... bunch of garbage, but he did win an Emmy, an Oscar award for this film, and of course he's made other films, Schindler's List and other propaganda films, But this one he did, The Last Days of the Big Lie. And this was, produced this, came out May 23rd, 2011. And this was your first film. But it was not your first film, or your first effort in going after the propagandist. And you actually approached Elie Wiesel to talk to him about, do you want to talk about that at all?
I don't really like to talk about it myself. I just wanted to interview him and ask him questions that none of these, you know, fake journalists have ever dared to ask him about. You know, he's talked about walking right towards flaming pits of fire.
Right.
You know, I was taught this in high school, and I was young, 22, just graduated college. I learned about a lot of this stuff. I was really horrified and couldn't really understand that basically this entire world I was growing up to believe in was just a total lie. And I basically wanted to try something what you see on TMZ all the time. Just
right.
You ask these people questions on the street. You know, in New York, I grew up in the New York City area. I mean, I'm from New Jersey. There's a local investigative journalist segment called Shame on You, where they would, you know, a journalist would talk to people that are doing something wrong to the community, to the people, and they'd ask them difficult questions on the street and things like this. And I didn't handle it right. I just wasn't old enough, mature enough to really understand how to do it correctly, and I paid a heavy price. And since then, I've just been trying to do my best to make videos, because people are so brainwashed that I think these videos are the only way to really get through to them at this point.
Sure. Now, I actually met him. I live in the Chicago area, and I want to say back in probably 88, that he was appearing in a synagogue up north of Chicago. And this friend of mine said, oh, I want to go and meet him. And at that point in time, I still believed in the Holocaust. So I thought, oh, yes, I want to go with you. And so I met him, and I bought his book. It was a trilogy by then called Night. In fact, it's way downstairs. Otherwise, I should have brought it up. He signed it and everything. And if I had known or been thinking about it, I would have said, oh, could I see your tattoo? Because we've all been taught that they tattooed everybody. And I should have asked him, because I was talking to him face to face. And I'd been working with some Jewish people by then, and found them, well, the men are exploitive, to put it mildly. And in fact, I worked for a lot of people out in New York. I was a fabric rep, and they're not, their loyalties are very questionable. They are very exploitive. And I think that he was probably the same. But anyway, then I started reading through this book, and he's talking about blood shooting out of the ground. I'm thinking, what the heck is that all about? I mean, things that nobody in their right mind is going to believe. And
yeah,
yet...
Well, they target children with this that really don't know any better. Why shouldn't they believe it? All the adults, all the authority figures in their life are telling them that this is the absolute truth. And it's really just a work of fiction.
Exactly.
And, and even a lot of believers will claim this. However, he himself doesn't claim this at all. He claims it's 100% true.
Right. And he also claims that he was in a camp, and he elected to leave the camp and go with the Germans when he had the opportunity, instead of facing the Soviets. So that couldn't have been too bad if he decided to go along with them.
That was when he was in the hospital, too.
Yeah.
He was in the hospital getting his foot repaired. And
yeah, a hospital at a camp, yes.
Yeah, I mean, when you first get into this, when you first hear about the presence of hospitals at these places, it's sort of the first shocking thing, because, you know, why even bring them to hospitals if you're, you know, just going to kill them?
Well, why even take them to a camp if you're just going to kill them?
Exactly.
And yet they brought them to a camp. They would not have gone through all of this shaving them, giving them clean clothes, tattooing them, if they were going to kill them. I mean, that's a lot of record keeping, and they were keeping records of each and every prisoner. They wouldn't have done that, because if they were going to kill them, then these records would be proof that they were then under the jurisdiction of the Germans, and, well, where are they now? So, and the Germans are very effective. They're just a character. They would not be killing anybody. In fact, Hitler absolutely refused to use gas against the enemies, the Americans or the French or the British. He absolutely refused to use any kind of gas during World War II, because he was a victim of mustard gas in World War I. He suffered. He saw other Germans suffer, and he refused to use it. Had he used it at Normandy, the war would have gone completely different. But he elected not to do that because it was so barbaric. And so we are to believe that he actually used gas against a bunch of children. That's a bunch of nonsense.
Of course, yeah. I mean, and I think basically they lost the war because they were less vicious, they were less dishonorable than the Allies, who were firebombing women and children by
exactly.
the tens of thousands.
Exactly. Okay, and then your next film, and you've been very busy this year. I don't know how you accomplished all of this. Your next film came out March 5th, 2014. It's called The Jewish Gas Chamber Hoax. And it is available at your website, and we want to make sure that we give the website, and that is holocausthoaxmuseum.com, where you can watch all of the films and where you can make a contribution. There's a donation button. And Eric has just been doing all of this using his camera of the camera in his phone, which is unbelievable, that he could do such high quality stuff with a phone in his a camera in his phone. Absolutely unbelievable. You have been working and doing this stuff on a shoestring, and you produce these films that are every bit as good, every bit as quality out of Hollywood. Honestly, I think they're just fabulous.
Well,
I don't know how you do this.
Well, I mean, throughout the year, I think the first video, you know, the audio quality sort of suffers, but we're trying to make things better as we go along. We've got new audio equipment, microphone and audio interface box, and in this new video, I was able to do some 3D animation to show about the building modification. So really, the main reason people actually believe in this nonsense is that the presentations are really slick and high quality. I think a lot of people are turned off because of basically the shoestring budget does really turn people off, because they think, oh, it's just some YouTube video, it's some, you know.
Oh, I think you do a fabulous job with what you have. I'm so impressed.
Well, if we could get more funding, I'd definitely like to have higher quality camera, for sure. I'd like to continue making these things and continue to improve the production values. I think I can do it. The only thing stopping me really is financing at this point.
Sure. All righty. And that new camera is $800, you say?
Well, yeah, for like a sort of entry-level high-definition camera, I think we can do even better. I think there's this new 4K technology. You can get a really pretty great camera for close to $3,000. That would really, actually compete with the high quality professional
okay.
productions that you mentioned. You know, there are other costs for sure.
Okay.
And you know, I think a lot of people that are in our movement, they still go to the movie theaters. They still pay for cable. You know, we could have our own media if people change their habits. And, you know, it's sort of disappointing because I think you know about Denier, but he's another filmmaker who made great works. However, he wasn't supported and he sort of got discouraged and stopped making videos. So hopefully people can keep me going.
And that is what we do need to do. I can't even remember the last time that I went to a movie. I know that they're very expensive. And I definitely think that your work is superb. And, well, you took a little hiatus.
I took a hiatus because I couldn't afford to continue doing this. The first film was mostly made while I was in my car, you know, as a thought criminal. You know, it's really impossible for me to actually fund my own projects, especially that involve travel to these sites and things
sure.
like this.
Eric, you were actually living in your car for a while, right?
Yeah, I mean, as I was getting over, you know, what happened to me regarding the Wiesel incident, and you know, trying to get back on my feet, but I was still trying to get the truth out the only way I knew how.
And by getting, I know you don't want to talk about this, but by getting back on your feet, you were actually Elie Wiesel actually. Actually was responsible for you going to jail for a short time. Of course, it seemed like a long time.
I mean, I grabbed him by the sleeve and I said, I want to interview you. I let go almost immediately. I said this twice. And as a result, you know, it was a year and a half of my life. And then
whoops, I think we lost him. Okay, he spent time in jail, a year and a half, okay? And it was a terrible thing. He did live in his car. And, okay, dropped call. We got to add him back. Okay, we're calling him back. And this is a young kid that had a college degree. And because, okay, go ahead, continue.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm really devastated my life, and I'm just trying to do the best I can and try to make videos to try to prove to the world, try to show what was done to me and other people who are just who came to realize the truth and are paying a terrible price because of it.
Right, right. And you were locked. A lot of the work that you did was in the Holocaust Museum in L.A. You went to Stanford. Let's see, we got a question. Have you heard? Okay. Do you know about? Sorry to change the tune here. Edwin Black's tale about how his parents escaped the Holocaust.
I'm not familiar with it. It sounds vaguely familiar, but...
Right. But you did have some legal problems, and there was another a newspaper article that talked about a mental breakdown. Do you want to say anything about that?
Well, basically, because I didn't believe in this official narrative, I was labeled as, mentally ill. And, before this happened, I was never diagnosed with any such problems. I was picked for gifted and talented courses in school. I was captain of the tennis team. I was features editor of my school newspaper. I was Boy Scout, all of this stuff. All of a sudden, they want to claim that, I just became I don't even know what they want to claim I became, basically because I don't believe in this nonsense about gas showers.
So they claimed that you were mentally ill because you weren't accepting the big lie.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
It was really terrible for me because, I'm a young person. I still don't even know. I'm still supposed to trust these adults, these authority figures. And I've only recently been able to get back my sense of self and pride and ignore these liars who really took my own individuality away from me.
Exactly. Anybody else would have given up, Eric. I honestly think other people would have given up. And you have not given up. You went on to make 4 films. You were locked out of the, Stanford University locked you out of their...
Yeah.
Out of their archives so that you couldn't do any work. Tell us the story about that.
Well, you can access... it's called the Survivors of the Shoah Visual History Foundation. One of the places you can access it is at Stanford. This is where I access the sort of, it's now sort of infamous within the community of, it's a video of Irene Zisblatt. She's one of the stars of the Spielberg film, which won the Oscar. She claims she repeatedly defecated and swallowed diamonds for a year and a half. She claims she escaped from inside a gas chamber. She claims she was selected to have her skin turned into a lampshade. She claims she was thrown over an electrified barbed wire fence onto a train.
And saying you have a mental problem? And
exactly. So,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So this is something I've really had to come to terms with. If I'm going to bring this information forward to you and you're still going to judge me in this horrific way, I've learned to, just take some pride about myself and these other people, their opinions mean nothing to me. If you're going to listen to this pathological child abuser, really, she claims she had her tattoo removed by Dr. Mengele, and it's just one lie after another, and she won an Oscar award for Spielberg for this, and no mainstream journalist still to this day has ever dared to expose this crap, really, because it would in part vindicate me and the horrors I've come through, really, this just shows how absolutely worthless, and in fact, there's nothing, you can't say enough horrible things about these so-called journalists, that they still let this, that they let this go. I mean, this is just one little thing about this bigger lie for sure, but if they can't even talk about this, they're complete cowards and enemies of the truth, really.
Sure.
But they know they'll be living it in their car if they want to talk about this stuff, right?
Right. And it's very interesting, too, is that the Holocaust has been institutionalized. It is part of the school system. It's part of many religious systems. Many churches preach that the Jews are the chosen people. Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing how institutionalized Holocaustianity has become.
Well, that's the world I was brought up in. Every Sunday I'd go to church, and then Monday through Friday I'd read books like the ones you mentioned, and watch these videos like the ones I exposed today. It's real horror that's going on, and
sure,
I think we're gonna look back on this period and wonder how did we allow this to happen?
Sure. Now you lost your freedom for a time. You lost the ability really to earn a living the way that you had been educated to do. Mm-hmm. What about family? Are they supportive at all?
My family loves me, but they don't support any of the work I do. And it was only until early this year I realized I basically had to ignore their views about that, because they were very wrong about it, and I knew I was doing the right thing. And through that, it's taken, it's been about 8 years. It's taken about that long to really just develop my own sense of self-esteem, you could say. I've just been pretty much the subject of abuse for very long, and I think now, after these four films, people are really starting to be thankful for a lot of the work I've done, that I've pushed through a lot of this abuse. And
it is too. It is abuse.
I promised myself years ago that if I was to get back into this, I wanted to quit too, but when I saw that video at Stanford, I knew I wanted to do my best to stop what happened to me happening to any other kids, and I'm doing the best I can. That's all I can really do at this point.
And you really do a great job, Eric. You really do. The first time that I watched your film, knew about your story, I was just absolutely amazed by your courage and your persistence. I'm just so impressed.
Thanks.
A lot of people would have given up, and we see it in the so-called truth movement that if something is prominently believed, if a lot of people hold a belief to be absolutely true, that they will persecute anybody that has a question about it. And you have suffered that kind of persecution, not just by people in the so-called truth movement, but by the system, by the court system, in every aspect, occupationally, in every way. Whereas in the so-called truth movement, they might vilify you or call you a shill or something like that. But I don't know, you have an extra amount of courage, because so many people say, what's the use? Why fight the system? And you just keep fighting. I that is just amazing to me.
Thanks. I mean, it's sort of like once you know, you can't really go back. I mean, I guess some people can. I don't know, but you have your own show. You're doing your part. So you're just as courageous, and I give you a lot of credit as well.
Well, but there's a difference. See, you were just starting your life. You just graduated. you had your whole, a lot of people won't use their real names because they want to have some way of protecting their occupation, which I can understand.
Yes.
I can understand that completely, because if people see what has happened to you, obviously they're not going to put their name out there. But
I recommend not doing that.
Exactly. Somebody in the chat room wants to know how old you are. I don't want to ask you unless you...
I'm 30 now.
Okay. Yeah. And you've been doing this. How old were you when you started looking into this and speaking out?
Well, I was 22 when the big event in my life happened at age 22. I was, you know, I was questioning things a little bit before then. I saw what was happening to America and the world, and started asking.
Whoops, I think we lost him again. Okay, he's 30, and let me just grab him back here. Okay, we're going to add him back. Okay, we're calling him.
Hi.
Okay, we got you back.
So,
we lost you. So
yeah, I was looking into this a little bit before the age of 22, but I was always questioning things my whole life.
Whoops, we lost him again. Okay, so he has the ability to critically think, which is an amazing thing, because a lot of people do not critically think. A lot of people just accept what they're told. If the person who is telling them seems to have some authority, seems to be kind of a key opinion leader, they will just accept it. They won't use any critical thinking skills. They will not do any investigating of their own. They will just go with the flow because, well, who wants to be unpopular? Who wants to suffer from some of the things that Eric has suffered from? I mean, he was in jail, okay? A lot of people aren't willing to do this, and yet he was, because he wasn't going to believe everything that he was told. And that's amazing to me. Okay, we're still trying to get him back. Let me just, trying here. He's got a green light on, so I know he's, I assume that his internet is okay, but somehow we're not able. Okay, there we go. Okay.
Yeah, if we could get a caller, that would really help out.
That would help. But there's another question. What degree were you seeking in college?
Well, my degree was digital media. Personally, I was interested in film. I wasn't able to get into any such programs. I realized early on sort of what that industry was. And,
sure. All right, we do have a caller. Let's take this caller. 661. 661, did you have a question? 661, are you there? Do you have a question? Or?
I think that might have actually been me. I was trying to call in on the other line.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. All righty.
But my degree is digital media. So that's sort of what helps me with a variety of things. I'm able to do a little bit of 3D animation in the video you've seen, and the website and things. So I know a little bit of everything. I'm not as interested as I was back then. I don't really watch much TV or media now, so... yeah, my degree was digital media.
But that is helping you to build an incredibly impressive website. One of our the chatters said that you have a very, very impressive website, which I agree. And tell us a little bit about the idea that you have with the virtual Holocaust Museum. You have something called Virtual Museum Tour. So tell us a little bit about that and what your objectives are. And because, I mean, it's pretty impressive here.
Yeah, I mean, well, hopefully what we want to do is we want to create a 3D animated tour of a museum from our point of view. So we could have exhibits that explain to people about typhus, about the different sites, and why, about the claims before the war about 6 million. And I put that project on hold, and while I was working on this documentary, it's going to require more resources for sure, but hopefully we can get it done. There's really a lot we can do. The problem really is just financing. The other side sticks together, and they've got tons of money.
Sure. Sure.
You know, we just have the truth, but that can only get us so far, I've seen.
Now the virtual museum tour, it's really great. The thing that I like about it is that it's very light. As I said, I've been to the Holocaust Museum in Jerusalem, and then I was to another one in Texas when I was down there on a trip to teach quilting. And they're always very dark and very somber. And this is very light. And so people can go to HolocaustHoaxMuseum.com, and they can take this guided tour through the museum. And in the second photo that you have,
it's not actually ready yet. We just basically have some sort of a prototype. If people think the idea is worthwhile, you know, they can support it. If not, I won't be able to do it. But you know, I think it could really make a difference to get through to people.
Exactly. Now, what I like, the second picture that you have, is a picture. It's an unfinished replica of the San Quentin execution gas chamber that shows the intricacies of American gas chamber executions, and why the ridiculous gas chambers disguised as shower rooms presented to us as unquestionably true are absurdly impossible. And of course Fred Leuchter says the same exact thing. They could not have possibly gassed people in the rooms that they're saying, because first of all, they were not airtight. I mean, it's preposterous. And they also say that everybody was dead in 5 minutes, where sometimes it takes longer. It's a gruesome way to kill people. So talk to us a little bit about that.
There's a variety of holes in the story, as you've pointed out. At Majdanek in particular, there's one room that's claimed to have been used as a gas chamber. However, it has no holes in the ceiling. And this is where we're told that that it was dropped down through holes in the ceiling. So for this to have actually happened in this room, the guards would have had to have thrown the pellets over the heads quickly before slamming the door. And this is so absurd that today museum staff has admitted that basically only clothing was fumigated with Zyklon in that particular room. So there's absurdities that the liars are continuing to back away from as we expose them. But of course, that room in particular was just used for fumigating clothing. There was a heater connected to this room for that purpose.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. We do have another caller. Let's take this caller from 870. 870,
hello.
You have a question. Yes, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for letting me speak. What I would like to do, if this would be okay, I have a subject that I would like to suggest to Mr. Hunt. It's in his genre, but it's something that has never been covered by a Holocaust revisionist. And basically the subject is, I want to talk about a very gruesome experiment that the Jews performed on German children in 1931 that really led to them being kicked out of Germany. It's called the Lubeck experiment. And
my thinking is,
if I could just touch down on some of the facts, Mr. Hunt might be interested in this, and then later on he could call me back, and I'll call him, and I'll fill him in with all the scientific background, and then if he wants to turn that into a video, he'd be more than welcome. So could I talk for a couple of minutes?
Sure.
Okay, let me tell you what happened in 1931. First of all, the background to this is Jews were kicked out of the city of Lübeck, Germany, in the 1800s. The mayor of the city of Lübeck wrote, he just handed down a decision, and he said, we'd like all the Jewish people to leave. So by 1931, the situation was that Jews hadn't lived in Lübeck for several generations, and also Jews had complete control of the public health care system. Over 50% of all the doctors in Germany were Jewish, and most of them had public health care jobs because nobody wanted to go to a Jewish physician. Now, for some reason, Jewish pediatricians went into the city of Lübeck, and their story was that they were going to vaccinate newborn babies against tuberculosis. And what happened was, over this process that they were going into the nurseries, children were dying of tuberculosis, and it got to a total of 83 children actually dying from tuberculosis. So the German people said, we don't understand this. You're vaccinating our children, but they're dying of the disease that you're vaccinating them for. And the Jewish doctors, being Jewish, said, we have to have a positive control. We have to have a positive control. So they admitted, at the get-go, they admitted that certain of the children, I would think they were kids with blue eyes. I would think identical twins with blue eyes, because that's what Mengele gets accused of. But what they did was they gave live tuberculosis organisms to 83 children who died, and that ended up, I think they put two or three doctors in jail, and one of them died in jail. Then in 1933, when Hitler was appointed chancellor, one of his first steps was to disavow, he basically said Jews are no longer welcome in our civil service system. Now, if you let me, I'm not just blowing wind, pardon me, that's a little vulgar, but I'm not just making this up or exaggerating. I would like to quote from you now. This is a book written by a very scholarly gentleman named Robert Oldby, and he wrote about the DNA molecule. And here on page 40, it says, no time was wasted by the Nazi government in drafting legislation to implement its racist aims, comma. April 1933 saw the passing of the government employees law, under which employment was not to be given to persons of non-Aryan descent. Now, you see, what Oldby is doing is he's whitewashing the motives that the German people had for kicking Jews out of the civil service system. Now, since this time, what happened was, with Jews expelled out of the public health system, they went directly to Canada, and they pulled this same stunt on Aboriginal children, which is now being blamed on priests and nuns. Now, yeah, you're right. You have heard this. You have heard rumors. People are writing stories now that for some reason priests and nuns were feeding Indian children tuberculosis organisms so that they would die, which is the wildest, craziest thing in the world. Now, I've got just two more points to make. If Mr. Hunt does a search on the term Lübeck experiment, he will find the same story written up, but it's going to be written up in a way that's completely whitewashed and there's no mention of the Jews. Now, I'm going to share with you now the one fact that proves that this was a Jewish hate crime, a Jewish atrocity. I have in my hands a book written by two Jews named Portugal and Cohen. The title is A Century of DNA. And I'm now going to turn to page 351. And down on the page, reference 50, it says, and I quote, the Lübeck trial of 1932 involved Jewish doctors charged with the deaths of several children who had been fed a virulent bacillus. This was exploited at the time for racial political ends. The evidence showed that the virulent and benign strains had been mixed accidentally. And that's what you'll see as you search the literature. It's going to say, oh, the labels, they washed off the jars and the children got the disease accidentally. That's not true. It's not true at all. Now, like I said, I'm in a position to explain the science to Mr. Hunt if he wants to take off on something that explains why German people were frightened to death of the Jews. I can do that. So all you have to do.
Oh, this is fabulous.
Now, you see what I'm saying? I'm giving you a rock solid proof, and I'll mention, if I don't want to take up all your time, but I can tell you the name of the scientist who went to testify on behalf of the Jews. And now you know why Mengele was always accused of doing research on Jewish twins and trying to turn their eyes blue. Because the truth is that during the Lübeck experiment, Jewish doctors were looking for identical twins with blue eyes. They killed one of the kids with a live organism. They vaccinated the other. Now, I went to medical school in the 70s, and in the 70s, our professors offered us the BCG vaccine, which is the tuberculosis vaccine. And they told our class, they said, well, this is optional. We don't know if you want to take the BCG vaccine. And I took it, and I had no idea what had happened historically. But you see, even up until the 1970s, the medical profession was covering up for this horrific racial hate crime carried out by Jewish doctors. So you have my number. If Mr. Hunt wants to talk about this, I'd be happy to answer any questions. And I can, like I'm saying, do a search on the term Lübeck experiment. Find out what you can find out and, you know, just make up your mind. Do you want to do this as a video? If yes, give me a call and I'll give you this background information. I'll tell you where to find these exact same quotes, and then you can bolster it up. But like I said, this is a modern day issue, because Jews are still vilifying Mengele. People are still pretending that priests and nuns did this to Indian children in Canada, and it wasn't. The doctors who fled Germany in 1933 went to Canada, and they said, here we're going to have fun with Indians. You know, the idea that priests and nuns are going to have tuberculosis organisms hidden in their habits and stuff, I mean, and their baptismal water fonts, I mean, that's crazy. That's insane. But you see what I'm saying? This is a direction Eric could head into that nobody has touched down on before, and it's still valid today, because now the claim is that the Catholic Church did it, and the Jew lawyers in Canada are getting geared up to sue the Catholic Church in Canada for billions of dollars for something that was a Jewish hate crime. Now, how would you prove that? The answer is you dig up these Indian kids who died in Canada, and you determine the strain of the organism, and then you check that against the strain of the organism that killed the German children in Lübeck, Germany. If the two strains of organisms are identical, then you have solid proof that Jews killed not only 83 children in Germany, but that they killed thousands of Aboriginal children in Canada. Okie doke, I'm all done talking, so if you have questions, you can ask me, or I'll hang up, either way.
Unbelievable. I've heard of this Lübeck experiment. I've also had an individual on my program talking about how it was the Catholic Church that did this. And the points that you bring up are pretty profound. Eric, what do you think? Eric, are you there? Oops. Hang on. We got to get Eric back. Okay.
Yep.
Sorry.
He can listen to the rebroadcast.
Yes. Eric, okay. Hi. Did you hear?
Yes, I heard most of what the other caller talked about. It sounded interesting. I think I've heard vaguely about this. I suggest he post to the CODO forums about this. They'd be really interested in this for sure.
This is just amazing information. I have a personal interest in this. I'm not Catholic or anything, but... just the idea that there's some sort of scientific background for Hitler actually taking the people out of the health services, because in my last book, I talked about that was one of the first things that he did, was to get the doctors out of the health system, the Jewish doctors out of the health system. And this is a justification for doing that.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea to have this man on as a guest. This sounds like a topic that you could go into for...
Exactly. Now, would it be something that you would be interested in making a film?
You know,
adding it to a film?
I think, yeah, it would be mentioned as a... It could be useful as a segment to a larger film, for sure. I think what I want to do next is sort of a general overview of the entire, of the entire subject, and something like this could be useful for a small segment of that.
Absolutely. This is very fascinating information. So, caller, are you still with us?
Yes, ma'am.
The fact is, how could a bunch of nuns and priests get a hold of bacteria?
Well, I mean, we're told that the Germans did all of this for no reasons. What they did. However, things like what your caller mentions, you see that a lot of the actions that they had were justified to protect their own people.
Exactly. Holy cow. And I had heard about this, but you know how sometimes you hear about something and then you go on to view something else. But the minute he said Lubeck, then it all came to mind. But I didn't know some of the details. And I didn't connect it to Canada in any way, shape, or form. Now, who is this Robert Olvi? Who is this guy?
Okay, Olvi is an extremely left-wing guy, but he's an extremely capable scholar. The title of his book, I have the book in a Dover edition, and it's called The Path to the Double Helix, The Discovery of DNA.
Okay.
But all you have to do is call me, and I'll be happy to give you the quotes so you don't have to buy the book for yourself. But if you want to check on my references, you please go ahead. The other book is called A Century of DNA.
Right, it's got that down.
Yeah, two Jews named Portugal and Cohen, and the guy who went and testified was named Erwin Chargoff. Now, Chargoff actually did a wonderful thing in DNA research. He established that the nucleotide base pairs were in a 50-50 ratio. In other words, every time there was an adenine, there was a thymine, and every time there was a glycine, there was a cytosine. So Chargoff was a he was of extreme signal importance in DNA research. So I don't mean to diminish his contribution in terms of what he did for DNA research, but as a Jew, he's going to tell any story he has to tell. But now you know why Mengele... why we have all these make-believe stories about Mengele squirting blue dye into the eyes of Jewish children to give them blue eyes. These things never happen, but it's revenge. You know what I'm saying? This is a blood libel revenge against the German people because they caught on to the Lubeck experiment, and they stopped it with only 83 children being killed.
Wow. And, of course... Go ahead.
Was there any specific mention of this by any of the top Nazi officials or propagandists, you could say? Did they ever mention this?
You know, that is an excellent question. And what you would have to do, you would have to do searches. If you do searches against the word Lubeck, you know, you might find it. You won't find it under Jewish research, but if you keep searching the word Lubeck against the name of a German leader, you might find something where they said that. But see, the idea of a positive control and a negative control, that's a little bit, when I explain it to you, it makes perfect sense. But in those days, in the 1930s, you hardly would expect a Goebbels or a Hitler to really to understand the fine points of what happened. So I doubt that they would that you'll find a mention of that, because the books have all been sanitized. But
They burnt them all. Yes.
Yeah. So, actually, the books that were burned by the Nazis, that was all pornography. But
right. But the Allies burnt all the books that were written from 1933 on.
I did not know that happened, but I wouldn't be surprised. They also stole all the German the Jews have the patent on Bayer aspirin. So every time you take a Bayer aspirin, you're paying a tribute to it. You're paying a tax to a Jew who had nothing to do with the invention of Bayer aspirin. So they're that just that evil. But that is a good idea. If you search the writings, like I'm saying, Hitler would be naive scientifically. Goebbels would be naive scientifically. I don't know if there was a doctor. Mengele would have known about the Lucre experiment, but he was kept running his whole life. Mengele was essentially the first Eric Hunt, when you get right down to it. The first Eric Hunt in the world was Mengele.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Wow.
That's a compliment, Eric.
All right.
Yeah, I would think that's a compliment, too. Honestly, I do. And somebody in the chat room mentioned projection, which is something I was just going to say, that they usually project the things that they are doing to others onto innocent people. That is what they do.
In the Old Testament, the Jews killed all the firstborn of the Egyptian children. And in Deuteronomy, it says, kill them all. And actually, I could go on. I could also get into the Salk vaccine, because you don't really understand what Jonas Salk did. But I just want to give you this one plum and think about it. And then maybe sometime you start talking about the polio vaccine, and I'll give you the skinny on what Jonas Salk did. Because Salk was essentially, he repeated the Lubick experiment, only he did it on American children. But the Discovery Channel shows little kids in black and white photography. They're waving their hands and they're saying, thank you, Dr. Salk. Thank you for saving our lives. But Jonas Salk actually personally killed 11 children. He turned out one batch that was so virulent that 11 kids dropped dead as soon as they were vaccinated. But that's not for this afternoon. Today, like I'm saying, I'm available to give you the skinny on the Lubick experiment. I'll tell you where the references are. You go to your library and you have them get the book for you, order the books, and check my story for yourself, and then look up the Lubick experiment on the internet, and you'll find whitewash studies. It'll say, well, you know, the BCG vaccine, it was always trouble. Yes, when I was in medical school in the 70s, my professors were still stroking their beards, and they were pretending that it was the vaccine and not the Jew. But it wasn't the vaccine. It was the Jew. And it actually went from Germany all the way to Canada, and that's what's going on right now. And the question is, how to stop the Catholic Church from being crucified for something they never did. The only suggestion, I have two suggestions. Find out the names of the doctors working in these Catholic-sponsored orphanages. Find out their names. They'll be Jews, so they change their name to Kirk Douglas and Monica Lewinsky. You know what I'm saying? They will have anglicized their names, so see if you can find pictures. There won't be any pictures. So the only thing left is to compare the strain of the organism that killed the kids in Canada to the organism that killed the kids in Germany. And there, all I can say is good luck, because those records have been the German records. In fact, Lubeck was bombed. Lubeck was a port city. And towards the end of the war, Lubeck was bombed just like Dresden for no reason at all. But the Jews wanted to get even with the people in Lubeck, Germany, for kicking them out, for basically blowing the whistle. Because that's where their fantasies about how they're the greatest doctors in the world, that's where it collapsed, is in the city of Lubeck, Germany in 1931. And they've never gotten even, they've never had enough revenge for what happened to them. But like I'm saying, I have the books in my library. I can give you the ISBN numbers. I'll tell you the page numbers. You don't have to buy the books. You go to the library and get them yourself. But the book by Olby is a masterpiece of explaining how the structure of the DNA molecule was finally figured out, and I swear by it. But like I'm saying, Olby is one of those guys who's politically correct, so he's gonna say anything he has to say to come out on the side of the Jews. He's gonna cover up for them. Okay,
now
well,
that's
I'm much...
O-L-B-E-Y?
Just a second. No, there's no E. Robert Olby, O-L-B-Y.
Okay. Okay.
And that's in the, it's in the Dover edition is the cheapest one to purchase. And there's a tremendous number of quotes. In my own research, my idea, my own research is to get quantum mechanics working in molecular biology. And Olby says that. He says people like Francis Crick and Jerry Donahue, that was their goal too, that they were physicists who were sick of doing atom bomb research. And when the war was over, they were thrilled to go into biology and work for the benefit of mankind. So my own research, essentially, I'm carrying on the dreams of Francis Crick. That sounds kind of pompous, doesn't it? Well, okay,
no.
I'm sorry. It sounds
no,
pompous.
It's fine.
That's really what I'm trying to accomplish, and I'm doing it. I'm living out of my trunk, the trunk of my car, the same way that Eric is, the same way that Mengele did.
I'm not.
You know what I'm saying? It's just James Dewey Watson right now lost everything because he said black people are less intelligent than white people. So
yeah.
This is the minorities are vilifying people who tell the truth. You know, that's what's happening.
Yeah, that's a great point about Watson. You know, even though you can be a genius like him, and he was brought to bankruptcy, that he had to sell his prize, and it doesn't matter how brilliant you are, how much the truth is on your side. The people with the money and the power are going to try to ruin your career, ruin your life. And Mr. Watson's certainly a hero of mine. And I think hopefully in his case, maybe he'll bring to light, you know, some other heroes such as Germar Rudolph and people like that who have also similarly suffered.
Or like Eric Hunt. Wow.
Well, Watson just, he sold his Nobel Prize, and it was bought by a Russian guy today or yesterday, and the guy paid $4 million for it, and he gave the prize back to Jim Watson. So, but the same thing happened to Francis Crick. Crick died of colon cancer in 2002 or 2003, and his family now is trying to sell his Nobel Prize. I should mention that O.J. Simpson has the knife for sale that he used to slaughter his wife. He wants $5 million for it, and he wants cash. So I think O.J. Simpson is going to get more money for the knife he used to slaughter his wife than Francis Crick and James Dewey Watson together. That's my own personal opinion. And that's how sick our society is. You know, that's basically how completely degenerate a world we're living in.
Exactly. Well, wow. Thank you so much for your phone call. It's very... very informative, and certainly something that I had looked into, but just failed to follow through. Wow. Thank you.
Okie doke. I'm enjoying the show very much, so I'm going to hang up, and I'll reconnect through Blog Talk. Thanks again.
Okay. Great. Thank you. All righty. Well, Eric, that was interesting.
Yeah, I think you should have him on for a full show. He seems to know a lot about medicine in particular.
And that other, the other thing that he was talking about was the experiment, and that it was in 1931. That was 2 years before Hitler came to power. And it certainly makes me understand more why he dismissed the Jews from the medical service.
Mm-hmm. And most claims about, you know, experimentation that were going on by the Germans were actually, well, not only were they false, but what actual, quote, experimentation was going on was to save lives, such as, quote, experimental typhus vaccines given to prisoners to save their lives. Experimental people today sign up, they volunteer for, quote, experimental cures, experimental vaccines, experimental medical trials too.
Oh gosh.
And there's actually a case that it was sort of cut out of my video at the last minute, but her name, let me think, she has this ridiculous beehive haircut. she was actually transited through Treblinka and sent to Majdanek.
Oh, I think I remember her.
Zelda Gordon. She was given an experimental typhus vaccine in the hospital at Majdanek. This saved her life, and you know, she'll go around and claim she was experimented on. Well, let's see. If you weren't, quote, experimented on, you probably would have been dead. So the Americans also had similar vaccine, quote, experimentation going on.
They still do, actually.
Yes. And a lot of it was just to save human lives.
Now, the other thing that you bring up, I'm sorry to interrupt, you talk in your video about the autopsies, and you show a table, and they say that that they were doing experiments on these people on this table, where in fact they were trying to figure out how somebody died. Correct? Can you talk to?
What they claim was that this it's a normal autopsy table. You could see almost basically identical tables everywhere, even today.
Sure.
They claim that this was used solely to retrieve valuables that prisoners hid in their lower orifices and perhaps swallowed, you know.
Like the diamonds.
Yeah, so they want you to believe this table was used basically to cut open and reach inside prisoners for, you know, jewelry. But of course, you know, this table was used to determine how these people died. You know, the cause of death was recorded. You know, they had these death books, and that's actually how one of the ways we know how many people actually died in some of these places. So they try to lie about almost everything at these camps. You know.
Yeah. Wow. Well, our time is running short. Let's have you give information again. Let me do it. So,
yes.
Okay. Eric needs money. If you've got some extra cash, go to the website, visit the website, holocausthoaxmuseum.com, and click on the donation button and send him as much as you can spare. Plain and simple, this is an individual that needs our help. I'm sorry. I'm just always so emotional. But if there's anybody that you're going to help somebody that has had the guts and the courage and the persistence to literally sacrifice his life, his college career, everything that is near and dear, and has put out these wonderful videos just to educate us, simply because it was true. He didn't do it to get rich. He's not getting rich. He's just barely subsisting. And so do what you can. Donate what you can to help this young, courageous individual to continue doing what he's doing, to help us. He's helping us, okay? He's not doing this for his health. He's helping us to share the truth, and he's doing it probably better than anybody I know. So that's my spiel for.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I don't necessarily need the money. I put the money back into the production. I want better production values for these videos. I am continuing to improve the production values. You can see this if you look through the videos. And thank you very much for having me on. I'm not a great guest, but
yes, you are a great guest.
If you watch the videos, I'm doing something other people aren't doing, so hopefully we can improve these videos.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so very much for what you do. I personally appreciate it very much. So thank you.
Thank you.
And listeners, take care. And we'll talk to you soon. And be generous, if you can, when you visit Eric's site. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye, Eric.
Bye, thanks.
It starts with you and me.
It starts with you.
It starts with you and me.